in all of us a state of chronic psychophysical strain and discomfort, which after a while becomes unconscious. We fail to notice it, but it underlies our ulcers and our irritations and our frustrations, which eventually build up into our vast and appalling political idiocies. It's very difficult to get people to recover from this. And trying to come back to themselves, to come back to a unity and harmony with their own organisms, they still have the tendency to look to authority of some kind to tell them what they ought to be. In order to be exercised, they're quite astonished at first when they're invited to become more restful, to give up the doing so that they can listen better to what their body has to tell them. We need quiet for self-experience, quiet and awakeness. We need permissiveness, too, to all the subtle changes which may be needed. But we ask, what can one feel of one's own organism? What of happenings within? Not what one knows of one's body, or what one thinks about it, or believes somebody else expects one to feel of it, but what one actually senses, no matter what comes to the fore. But this is difficult, of course, because we expect that we are supposed to conform to a pattern, and that there is somebody who knows what we ideally ought to be, ought to feel. And this despite, this is the curious thing, this is the paradox, this despite all the emphasis in the Western world on the value of individuality, the value of personal uniquenesses and the differences between man and man. Isn't it strange that to fulfill this great ideal, this democratic, personalistic ideal of the Western world, it seems to be very necessary for us to learn from the East the very great differences which exist between one individual physical organism and another, to trust one's own inner. This is, I suppose, the most difficult thing to explain in words, because when we just think about it theoretically, all kinds of objections come up to it. We think that there can only be sanity, only order in society by holding a club over ourselves as if we were naturally, organically, and physically little monsters. Really, there is no monstrousness in nature like the monstrousness of man. We talk about the violent life of the ocean's depths, of the way the fishes eat each other and live in perpetual conflict. At least the fishes stay in the ocean and don't come up and attack the birds and the mammals and the people on the dry land. But nobody is safe from man. Radioactive fish in the Pacific, birds bewildered by turmoil in the skies, insects ravaged and upset in their balances. This is not a condemnation of human intelligence, but an appeal to human intelligence to be both intelligent and sensitive, to be temporarily at least silent before the subtle movements of nature, to study them better, and to work with the grain of the world instead of against it.